Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations in all our hearts be acceptable to you, our strength, our song, and our salvation. Amen. Let's start today with the briefest of biology lessons. Pregnancy is not easy. Luke's story of Elizabeth and Mary meeting each other as they are both miraculously pregnant is full of tender and inspiring moments. If you look at artwork through the centuries, you'll notice three points of focus in the many paintings of the Visitation. The bellies of both women, great with child, their hands, reaching out to touch one another in amazement and gratitude and blessing, and their faces, which shine with wondrous delight, sometimes even seeming to bubble over with laughter, the kind that erupts from the depths of one's soul after being bottled up for a long, long time. In this prayerful, purple waiting time of Advent, we set aside this third Sunday of the season as Gaudete Sunday, Rejoice Sunday, a glimpse into the celebration of Christ's birth to come, and we light the pink candle for joy. Boy, we could use some of that now. So much in our current situation, in our world, in our country, in the body of this church, even in the bodies of some of our beloveds, so much now feels painful and divided, grief-stricken and uncertain. So, with all of that, how dare we blithely go about rejoicing? Don't we know? Don't we see? Don't we care about how much hurt there is around us? Isn't a pink candle far too cheesy and saccharine and Pollyanna-ish in the light of what is really going on? Well, of course it is. And it always has been, if you think of joy as dependent on immediate visible circumstances. But we light this pink candle for joy in the same way that we light the purple candles for hope and peace and love, claiming that these gifts of God's felt presence are true and with us, not in spite of the world's hurt, but precisely in the midst of it. There is witness to these gifts generations before, they are here with us now, and they are yet to be revealed in their fullness. The Advent wreath is a reminder of God's birth in the past and present and future, all brought together in this circle of light. And so these candles have been lit for hundreds of years in places where discord and despair make the headlines. But God knows, there is still good news to proclaim. All we need to do is look back at that visit between Mary and Elizabeth to see that the joy that bubbles up from them is so much more than a surface reaction to circumstances. Because these were their circumstances, as the Gospel of Luke tells it, some of the background story, and they weren't pretty. Elizabeth was the wife of the priest Zechariah. They were faithful and godly people, but despite their prayers, had never been able to have children, which at the time was regarded as a sign of God's disfavor. So people wagged their heads at them. And now they were too old even to hope for a child anymore. But one day, as Zechariah was serving in the temple, he was encountered by the angel Gabriel, who announced to him that he and Elizabeth would indeed bear a son, that they were to name him John, and that he would be a prophet in the tradition of Elijah. When Zechariah quite reasonably asked how that could be, given their ages and condition, Gabriel said that since Zechariah hadn't believed the angel's promise, he would be mute until the child was born. That was 6 months before Mary's visit to Elizabeth, her cousin. 6 months, Luke says, that Elizabeth had spent in seclusion. 6 months since her husband had returned home from the temple, unable to speak, completely silent, so that she would have had no clue about Gabriel's visit to him or the blessing of the promised birth to come. 6 months where, rather than being disgraced for her childlessness as before, she didn't dare go out now for fear of being taunted, ridiculed, or shamed for being an elderly pregnant woman and with a speechless husband to boot. And that says nothing of what pregnancy does even to the fittest of women. 6 months of morning sickness and stretching, of not being able to find a comfortable position to sleep, of swollen feet, and I imagine for Elizabeth in particular, of worry whether this pregnancy would come to term given her long history of disappointment. And she couldn't even have a conversation about all this with her husband for 6 months. Not easy. Mary's circumstances were no better. She was on the other end of the age spectrum, a teen next to the graying Elizabeth, and pledged to Joseph already, but not yet married, when the angel Gabriel came to her to announce that she too would bear a child full of God's promise. This put Mary and Joseph, her betrothed, and Mary's parents in the awkward predicament of not knowing who was the father of Mary's child. And imagine if your teen came to you and said, "I'm going to give birth to the Son of God." So many questions. Think of the gossip that would ensue. So Mary was shuffled off to be with her equally embarrassing pregnant geriatric cousin. Mary was pregnant without benefit of husband, had left home, had almost zero support system. Her people were still oppressed. The Pax Romana was largely achieved through violence, threats, and public executions. And the chasm between the haves and have-nots was vast and uncrossable. And Mary was definitely on the not side. It was in the midst of those circumstances of uncertainty, hurt, oppression, separation, and fear that Mary and Elizabeth came together and erupted in shared laughter and delight anyway. Because beneath the troublesome details of what was going on around them, which were many, they each recognized this true thing deeper than their circumstances, the aliveness of God that was within them and that brought both of them more fully to life and that would give life to others in the process. And that is the essence of joy. Recognition of an aliveness beyond us that touches something within us and brings both us and all around us more fully to life. It is aliveness unbound by circumstance. It is living through a dark purple season, but lighting a bold pink candle anyway. It is why Paul could write to the Philippians from prison, "Rejoice in the Lord, always. Again, I say, rejoice." And joy is prophetic. It sees beyond the here and now and connects us to others and to truth and beauty that is larger than our visible and current state of affairs. Listen again to the words that Mary sings when she greets Elizabeth. Truthfully, there was precious little in her situation that was reason for singing, and yet her joy isn't dependent on circumstance or time, and her song makes it sound as though God's new world is already here and has already turned things around. No wonder it was threatening. Here are her song words. Lord, you have reached out with the strength of your arm. You have scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. You have brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. You have filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. You have helped your beloved servant Israel in remembrance of your mercy, according to the promise you made to our ancestors, to Sarah and Abram and their descendants forever. Powerful words. Pastor Sarah sent me an article this past week from a site called the Ministry Collaborative that references Paul's letter to the Philippians in looking at the connection between joy and resilience. The author writes, being resilient means that after having been painfully deformed emotionally, spiritually, or vocationally, we have the capacity to bounce back to our God-intended form and purpose. Understood in this way, what is the engine that drives resilience? The book of Philippians suggests it is joy. At the time of writing this letter, the Apostle Paul is in prison. He is awaiting trial. He is separated from a church he dearly loves and uncertain that he will be able to continue his missionary journey. Death was a real possibility. And yet at this moment, Paul is deeply connected to joy, uses the word for joy and the verb that goes with it, rejoice, 14 times in this short epistle. It is Paul's joy that fuels his call to the church to hold fast and stand firm and keep on doing the things that you have seen and heard and received. It is his joy in his apostolic calling that compels him to press on toward the goal, despite the many obstacles in his way. Paul's resilience is predicated on his deep sense of joy. What the world needs now more than ever are not people who are tough, tenacious, or thick-skinned. What the world desperately needs now are people who are deeply connected to that which brings joy in their life and vocation. Howard Thurman memorably put it this way: ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. I don't think it's a stretch to say that we are suffering right now. And by we, I don't just mean we who are sitting here or who are worshiping online together or we who are part of this larger congregation, although that is surely true. The we of this church has certainly been buffeted by COVID and the toxic political climate and concerns for our children and community and planet, by illness and death, though we are not alone in any of those hardships or concerns. Even the land mourns, says the prophet Hosea. And the picture of apocalyptic upheaval that Jesus paints in Matthew 24 feels at times a little too close for comfort. But we in this body have had our own particular pains in recent months as well. Like others in times of uncertainty, this has led to further seclusion in some cases, and to the easy flow of communication being hindered either by silences or by hurtful words. We've been stretched, and some of us have lost sleep about what's next and whether we will have the stamina to keep going. We have so many questions. Did those circumstances sound familiar? Pregnancy isn't easy. What if, as Jesus also says in Matthew 24, these disturbances are but the beginning of birth pangs? What if we imagine ourselves in the place of Mary and Elizabeth and look at this time of discomfort and stretching in us and in the world, unbelievable as it might sound, as a God-promised gift of new life in us? What if we light this pink candle of joy in our midst, not to pretend that all is sweetness and light, but precisely because we know perfectly well it is not? And yet, we believe more perfectly still that God is in this place with us. What if we trust the promise that God will bring the seeds of this dark time to birth in the light and will use this time to help us find greater understanding of our past and greater connection in the here and now and greater vision for our future? What if we take this pregnant time together as a church, however long it lasts, to focus on those same three places that centuries of artwork highlighted in Mary and Elizabeth? We could, as a start, notice and name for each other the places where each of us carries God's presence. For Mary and Elizabeth, it was in their bellies. But it could be the way someone here writes regular notes of encouragement or faithfully cares for an ailing beloved. It could be someone's diligent prayer or humility in leadership or ability to ask just the right question at the right time or sing the song we need to hear. Mary and Elizabeth recognize the gifts of God within each other. And so can we. And they reached out their hands to each other in wonder and gratitude and blessing. Even with COVID restrictions in place, what can we do with our hands in this season to offer tenderness and care and grace to one another? We can light candles in times of darkness. We can restrain that immediate impulse. We can pick up the phone. We can make something special. We can give it away. We can dig deep and plant seeds and nurture growth as it starts to emerge. We can allow ourselves to be touched by someone else's offering. We can hold our hands open in willingness to receive. Mary's and Elizabeth's faces also shine. They look directly at each other. They laugh. They are radiant. They know this unimaginable thing is happening inside them, and it's going to change the world. Circumstances could hardly be worse, but they erupt with joy anyway, because they know they are carrying God's life, and nothing is more precious. So here's one more thing we can do in our own pregnant time together. We can look in the mirror. We can see in there who God sees. Beloved, unlikely vessels, bursting with possibility, gifted with God's own life. And maybe if we look long and deeply enough at ourselves, warts and wonder and all, then from the depths of our souls there will bubble up that kind of joyful laughter that we have not heard for a long time. Pregnancy is not easy, but it is necessary for new life. And the world needs people who have come alive. May it be so. Amen.